Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, my radio listeners. You are getting it right with Dr. Bowles. I hope that everything is going well for you this afternoon. As far as the month of September, it has simply eclipsed me. I was away, as I told many of my listeners, during the month of August in North Carolina. It took me a bit of a time to get back into my routine once I returned to Louisiana at the end of August, but September has just marched right past me. For those of you who have been listening, we've been talking about social justice in the United States. And just as a refresher course, social justice means that people who should, well, let's just start at the beginning. Social justice suggests and does mean that there should be an unfair advantage if you were rich or tall or small or white or black, that there should be a situation if you're living within a society where all of us have an equal right or equal opportunity to health care, an equal sense of safety in our home, equal opportunity for education, and so forth. So that is the basic meaning of social justice. And what I've talked about with an accompaniment with Ms. Sandra Bell Gash is, what is social justice on a large scale? What is it on an individual scale? And what is it in general? Well, I've heard a lot of people define it in different ways. I have a number of acquaintances who seek to, what can I say, discuss social justice in different forums. Some use blogs, some's on Facebook. And, of course, I'm here on internet radio. But the bottom line is, talk doesn't make it happen. And I'm at a point in my life where action is really what I'm about. I'd smile if you heard it in my voice. I ran into someone recently that was a church member, and I saw them every Sunday and whatever special occasion the church had for probably 5 years. I was never invited to the home to have dinner, to have lunch, to share a birthday, to do anything that would be socially friendly. When I was in the church setting, it was some formalities and the obligatory kiss when you greet it, but nothing to say that you are special and I would like to have you in my life. Well, I have been sharing on the radio for some time that I'm on a journey of realization, and some things that happened 2.5 to 3 years ago really, really made me snap awake and look around me and say, am I doing the right things for the right reason? And am I reaping what it is I think I'm sowing for? And with all these questions and introspection, I made some changes in my life. And among those changes were I separated from this particular church. Well, I ran into this person, and they were, only word that I can think of, unctuous. Oh, I love you, and I miss you, and you should come back to the church body, and so forth. And I think of people who do such things, the grand, demonstrative stuff. I say they do it for show. I guess there's other terms or other things you may think of. But the bottom line is, if there had been so much love, then I should have felt it by now. I should have felt it during those first 5 years when I was very dedicated to the church. I should have felt it in the last 2.5 years when I felt estranged and lonely and absent. And this moment of declaration in a very public place and the almost imploring to rejoin really causes me to feel a bit cynical. And it plays into my concept of social justice, because when I see, as a black female in this America, when I see that when I'm performing professionally, there are those who are interested in what I have to say. When I'm teaching or training, there are those who are apt to do what I'm asking them to. And when I'm endorsing and helping others to achieve their level of excellence that they've targeted, there's that momentary act of appreciation, and then it's gone. And it's left me to wonder, what is forever? What is everlasting? Where is the sense of trust? And why do we as a people, as a human body, seek out society? I watch a number of the shows, the realistic shows, where people living in Alaska, they're living on frozen ice. They escape to these very remote areas. And even in their intentional isolation, there are those who say, without hearing a human voice, I feel I'm losing part of me. There's a bit of humanness that's lost when you are isolated, when you're ostracized, when you don't have that laughter, that sense of camaraderie. And although I've never been in the Alaskan bush, nor do I intend to go there, I do know what the feeling of ostracism and isolation is all about. In these United States of America, you can be welcomed for your ability to perform and then dismissed when there is a moment of levity or a sense of camaraderie. Trust me, I have had that experience more times than I can even count. I don't even know the number of times I have been the student, the resident, the intern, the on-the-job advisor, consultant, only to find out that over the weekend, the same body who treat me with such endearment and necessity will say, oh, did you enjoy the wedding? And I'll learn, oh, so your son, your daughter, your nephew was married, and all of the whispering and quiet lunch meetings had to do with the setup of the wedding, and never was I included. And I can walk up and see them sharing pictures. Someone just had a baby or came back from a honeymoon, and they're sharing the pictures, and there's that sense of social frivolity and joy, and I come in and it quiets. That kind of, what is the word, dismissal, devaluation, is the kinds of things that I refer to when I say injustice on a continual basis, or even a better term, the industrialized racism is the term that comes to mind. No one necessarily is locking me in a jail cell and kicking me when no one's watching. No one is calling me names or putting me on display in some fallacious way. But the subtle, the quiet, the accepted types of put down, which are really the chronicles of my life. And I was sharing with a friend recently that there are certain kinds of burdens, and you want to use a college word, you can say the vicissitudes that aren't discussed. If it's in a black community, black American community, it's not discussed because somehow that shows a weakness. If you say it was difficult, or if you tell your small failures along the way or sense of disappointments, you're hushed up. The black American has to prove their value. They have to prove their worthiness. They have to prove the acceptability of their presence so that any fracture in the armor is letting down the group as a whole. And those of us who were the glass ceiling breakers, those of us who were the integrationists, those of us who were often the only and the first in these United States, don't really have a joy that being the first might imply. I noticed that during the television awards, there was a black female selected for her role, and unfortunately, I don't watch a lot of TV, so I don't even know what her selection was or how worthy she was to receive it. And in her speech, she reminded me of me, but it's something I said 20 years ago, that her selection was not so much an applause to her abilities to do it. It was more a permissiveness of society, that in the United States, segregation was clearly a governmental, institutional, decided form of government. The apartheid that so freely is discussed in South Africa existed in these United States and probably even started from these United States. And whenever it is brought up, that's a hidden thing. That's a secret. You don't talk about that. That is being not very loyal. But the acceptance of the concept of there are superior people and inferior people, and in the United States, they took it one step further because Black Americans were not people at all. They were treated as cattle or livestock. And it wasn't until the Southern representatives and senators wanted to have a higher vote, and there was such a dense population of slave people or released slave descendants, that they petitioned to have the Black American counted as two-thirds of a man so that in the elections they could count the colored people and help them get into office. Why am I talking about that? Well, if you're going to talk social justice, you have to talk society. And if you're going to talk society in the United States, you have to look at the origin, the maturation, the reasons behind. I listen to, there are those who are still in pursuit of the Germans who perpetrated, as they said, wartime crimes. And after all these years, if they capture someone, they still prosecute. And I ask, why are there not the same due diligence to capture the slave mongers of the United States? Why is there not the same due diligence of seeking out, punishing, and eradicating those who advocate the inferiority of a people in these United States? But such comments and such discussions will get a lot of people uncomfortable. And I even have worked with professionals where they can feel tearful and sad when there's a story about a dog that was mistreated or some cat that was mistreated. They can get all mushy and warm and fuzzy when they rescue an animal out of a pipe. But you can talk about a drive-by shooting or the death of a child in the arms of the mother if it happens that the police open fire and killed a mother holding a nine-month-old child. You don't see the same response. There's not the tearfulness. There's not the warm and fuzzy. There's not that sentiment. And I have to ask, is the society in these United States ever meant to be inclusive? I know that Donald Trump is in the news, and he talks about how he doesn't like Mexicans, and I'm sure he doesn't like Black folk, and the comments of how America should only be spoken English, and why are we trying to diversify, and I know in the news there's this big controversy on whether or not we should be getting the Syrian refugees, and there's been all kind of introductions of Muslim being someone we shouldn't accept in this country because of the 9/11 bombings and so forth and so on. The bottom line, the American society is riddled with prejudicial behaviors. And their racism, the hatred of someone who's not European or Nordic descent, as the Constitution identified these United States was being formed for, continues. But there is no honest discussion of this. And when the concept of reparation, when they say, why don't you pay the Black American for all those years of servitude, and why don't you fix what was broken in the concept of the Constitution recognizing a people as only two-thirds human? How can you purport to be the keeper of laws in a world situation and the laws you institute in your own country is riddled with all kinds of biases? How can your Constitution say that you are innocent until proven guilty and you are to be judged by your peers? And then you let a president, when President Bill Clinton signed into law 3 strikes and you have life imprisonment, doesn't that violate the very tenet of the Constitution of these United States? I was talking to someone, and I'm sure those in my listening audience are familiar with CASA. It's the Child Advocacy Program. And I was talking about, at least in the state of Louisiana, how there's such a low high school graduation rate. No, I'll take that back. Not just a low high school graduation rate, but even those students who sit in the classroom and matriculate in accordance with a high school matriculation through public school in Louisiana still do not receive a diploma. 66.1% of all high school attendees in the state of Louisiana do not receive a high school diploma, but they do get a morning board and a gown, and they walk across the stage. They get a roll of paper with a ribbon on it, and they get their picture taken and have all of the ceremony and the pomp and circumstance, as it used to be called. And the reality is they do not have a diploma. And all businesses that require diploma for employment will not employ them. And then you have public figures and others saying, why don't you get a job? And I look at them and say, well, why didn't you educate them? How can the Department of Education in these United States of America know what I know, and they do, and still take taxpayers' money and pay a public school $98 per student per day, knowing that upon the end of a four-year high school, public high school matriculation, they did not get what they paid for? I asked the question. What else? What other profession will work like that? If I tell you that I will work for you for 4 years and you give me a salary on a continuous basis, and when you come and inspect and the work is not done, you demand your money back. Well, hello, America. What's going on? How do we spend money? United States will send people to jail for tax evasion, and yet they will use tax money and pay for things that are not completed. The execution is not done. I know that they look at Medicare and Medicaid fraud. I'm ready for people to start looking at Department of Education fraud. How can you say, well, the argument they gave me, in case you're wanting an answer to that, and I'm not so rhetorical, they said when President Bush, not old man Bush, the second one, Jeb's younger brother, when he said, leave no child behind, that sounded wonderful, America. And here we were in our silliness, listening to that kind of foolishness and going along with it without outrage. Well, what was the translation of that Bush edict? It means that your child can be passed right on to the grade that is age appropriate. So if he's 16, that's 10th grade. 17, okay, let's give him 11th grade. Has nothing to do with his educational aptitude, has nothing to do with his educational acquisition, because leave no child behind means keep pushing them. And when they walk across that stage and you buy them that car, or you tell grandmother, look, son has now graduated high school, take a few minutes. Slide that ribbon off that piece of paper and read it. If you're in the state of Louisiana, and I don't know how, I haven't done my national studies, so I'm going to stay with what I know, that piece of paper will say this person has successfully attended. That's right, attended. It has not successfully completed, simply attended. And I followed up on that, and I asked some questions in Rapides Parish where I reside, and the high school kids who had come to me asking for some college recommendations. And I was told that this piece of paper does not even assure that this child is on the ninth grade level. All it means is they have successfully attended. That means they got up every morning, parents, they got dressed, they got on a bus, and they sat through a class. They didn't disrupt that class. And so they get a piece of paper after 4 years. It means absolutely nothing. That all your energy, your time, all you've done is sent your child to a holding service. and this child will not be able to get a job at most places. Walmart requires a high school diploma, and a certificate of attendance is not a high school diploma, and it may not even be high school at all. I was told that if someone has a certificate of attendance, they would have to be tested. And if you were looking to get what I used to call GED, and they've changed the acronym, it's the equivalency of a diploma, they would have to sit for an exam, and based on their score, find out what grade level they would be entered in to start their work towards a diploma, high school diploma. So what does that mean about society? You say, well, Dr. Bowles, where was all this, where's it heading? It means that in these United States, we have played so many games, we have hidden so many facts that we are no longer a superpower in the world. We are rapidly, if not already, becoming a joke. There used to be a game, Pin the Tail on the Donkey. And you'd blindfold someone, and you'd give them this tail, and you'd spin them around, you'd turn them loose. And they were supposed to, while blinded, while dizzy from that spending, find the rear end of a donkey. And that's how I feel more and more, that the United States is treating the citizens. We have been blindfolded. What does that mean? We have information withheld. We have information distorted. We have information that is controlled. When we look at the major networks and the manners in which we can correspond, there's becoming more and more and more limited. You would say, who owns the major networks? Who owns the major airways? I know that recently there was a group in out of Opelousas, Louisiana, Mr. John Freeman is the name that comes to mind, went to Washington, D.C. to fight to prevent the FCC from allowing large radio stations to dominate and control the airways. And there was, you'd say, a minor triumph in that. There was a ruling that low voltage or low frequency FMs must be allowed, because this is a way in which the local communities can communicate. If I'm not mistaken, the low frequency or low voltage FM don't cover a wide area, perhaps say area of 100 square miles or something like that, unlike the very big radio station that travels through multiple states. As the citizens lose their autonomy, as you can't know that Dr. Bowles has this opinion and Dr. Bowles is willing to fight for this and that, and if Dr. Bowles can help you, she will. And it becomes a machine, since they now recognize corporations as people, if you're giving a donation to a big campaign, we will lose our ability to be human. That they already have this automatic, what do they call it, sitter. I think her name is Alex or Alexis. And Alexis will tell you the recent news and what the weather is like, and I don't know what she costs. I think I saw it on one of the advertising networks that you could probably get her for $150. It's under $200. So you don't even need a human companion. You can simply look at this radio-like machine and say, Alexis, what's the weather like? And she'll tell you. Or if you ask her, what's the definition of this word? She'll go and search the web. Or how do you spell this or that? And what that seems to indicate to me is we are moving away from the humanness. And when you stop being human, society breaks down. When you are ruthless and you can hurt someone or maim someone, they call you a sociopath. Translation, you are pathologic to society. I know in the school systems, at least in the last 10 to 15 years, they began talking more about bullying and how to stop bullying and so forth, and I had to smile. Why all of a sudden is bullying such a big issue? Why do you have nasty little girls and nasty little liars on TV, and you show these little resentful children arguing with their parents in TV commercials. You see children threatening a parent for eating the very orange. I think there's a commercial where the parent buys oranges, and if you eat it, the child will show up at night and flashlight you in the face and tell you not to eat that particular fruit. What we as a people laugh at or smile at or ignore, the very presentation of the inner heart of what's going on in American society. Why would a parent allow a child to be in control? That same child will exhibit those behaviors in more public ways, and that usually means rudeness. It can be outright affrontive or aggressive. We call it bullying. You can have the Columbine effect where you have these children, 13-year-olds, if I remember correctly, was the age of the youngest child, getting guns from an uncle or grandfather and literally driving a vehicle and coming with the intent to get revenge, to maim, to harm. Not adults, but children. So if we don't take the responsibility of instilling social justice, if you like, if you don't teach your brother how to treat a sister, and you don't treat a child, you don't show a child how they're supposed to treat a mother or treat a father or treat a grandparent or treat a pet, then you are responsible for the chaos that we look at in such disbelief. I look at how our society of young people will put clothes on a small animal and parade them about, or put a dog in your purse and take them on a plane or in a grocery store, that you kiss the dog and let the dog lick you in the face. This animal cannot establish a society. And if you put your attentions into this animal rather than into a young human being, you will result in a society that is very animalistic. Only the strongest survive. I caught a show, I like watching forensics, and I saw a story. I was mostly doing painting. I think I've shared with you, I started to do art, and I pencil sketch, and I do oil paintings. And when I get into it, I get lost into time, and I put a background. Sometimes it's music, sometimes it's the television. But while I was working, my attention was snatched to the television, because the story that was being aired was so horrendous that I couldn't even focus it up out in my most intense moment. It was about a situation of a girl who was very kind, and she invited a female to share her apartment because the female was down on her luck. It also seems that this young woman that she invited into her home had once been a romantic rival, that they both went after the same guy. The female down on her luck had become pregnant by this fellow, but she had a stillborn child. And the young lady who was being generous and inviting her in had borne a live child for this young man. So the kind girl felt a kindred spirit and was feeling loving and inviting. And the one who came into her house was feeling jealous and angry that, how is it you had his baby and my baby died? And long story short, the invited person eventually recruited people who came in and killed the nice young lady. And what made it so horrendous, they killed two children under the age of four by putting plastic bags over their head and taping them in place. So even acts of kindness can be rewarded with such horrendous violence that I begin to wonder, is there a society at all in these United States? Have we waited too long and did too little to instill in the people a sense of empathy and caring? And I don't know the answer to that, but I know that social justice can help create a better environment for all of us in these United States. And with that, I thank you so much for listening. And I say take care. Until next time. Bye now.